We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Check them out online at goldsgym.com to find the location nearest you. And as always, download the free three-day VIP pass. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Now we go to Davey Hudson with today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
For today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day, as we continue along with making sure we're exercising properly to avoid injuries, I've said it before, I'll say it again, good form is essential. When you're first learning an exercise, it is perfectly fine to use little to no weight. Never sacrifice good form by hurrying to finish your reps or your sets, or if you're struggling to lift heavier weights. Again, good form is essential to avoiding injury, and that is today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
That's Davey Hudson, former 12-week challenge winner at Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out.
Ole Miss and Texas A&M. Those are the competitors that have been named for Tennessee and the best staff in the SEC competition.
I at least appreciate the fine because I definitely didn't consider Ole Miss. A&M was one that I thought about, but I hadn't had a chance to even kind of look up yet. We'll dive into that a little bit. Let's get to Josh on the next door home group hotline first, 865-546-8200 if you want to join the program. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Nate, Houston. You guys all right?
Morning, Josh. Doing well, man.
I would say I'm a little less impressed so far at some of the guys on the defensive side, Houston. I expected a lot more out of Tracy Rocker and Chris Rump. They just seem like they're missing in action on the recruiting trail to me. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Shurer, I've not really seen where he's delivered much myself. I mean, he promised that Travion Marshall kid, but he ended up at Georgia. So we got to get players in here. That's the number one priority right now to me. Rump and Rocker making $600,000 a year. I mean, it seems like free money. I don't get it.
Well, we talked a lot about it, Josh. I mean, I think year two, you'll be able to grade pretty, you know, completely, I think, on a lot of these guys. Pretty tough with year one, but once they've even had a kid that they didn't recruit in the program for an entire calendar year, and then you start playing football games again, I think you'll know a lot more. Shurer is slid to special teams now too, right? So
yep.
If the special teams take a big step back this year, that'll be a knock on him. If they're really good again, that'll be kind of another way to put on his grading scale. It's hard. It's really hard with position coaches, though, right? Like, you've got a bad coordinator or bad head coach or whatever.
Yeah, those wounds are obvious.
It's like Will Friend. Like, what do you think about Will Friend, Josh? How much leash you giving him this year?
I dog cussed Will Friend from the very beginning, but I will say he's at least recruited. You know.
Yep.
I think he's a terrible offensive line coach. He's been that way everywhere he's been, but. What gives me hope with him is we've got Chaney now, who's pretty good with O-line. So if you can have friends recruiting and Chaney's input with that position group, I think it kind of works out. But what we desperately need are defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm hoping, like you said, Nate, I'm hoping it's just a year one deal. But, give me the young guy like Niedermeyer. If you're not going to produce, get me some talent in here, which should be priority number one in his first couple years, give me a young guy that's hungry over one of these old coaches that you're just going to pay $600,000, you know, ridiculous money to.
It's a fair take, Josh. Appreciate it, buddy. Anything else for us?
Hey, that's it, guys. Y'all have a good one. Take care. See you.
Thanks, Josh.
It's almost impossible to grade a position coach in one season. You know what I mean? It even took the Butch Jones crew.
I mean, you're going to get a bump if you recruit well, but ultimately it's about what does your unit produce?
I guess that's more what I mean is how, like, right. I don't know if it's really hard to grade Zach Azani when Butch Jones, the former wide receiver, is the head coach and he's talking glowingly about their weird stance and their this and that. Like, it took a while to be able to try and separate kind of grading for who deserves blame when they falter and who deserves credit when they or even with recruiting sometimes it's I assume that the recruiting services get the lead recruiter information straight from the horse's mouth, but that still can be kind of a weird dynamic on who's the most impactful to certain kids and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because Rocker at other stops has recruited incredibly well. Trenton Thompson, Jonathan Ledbetter, Gabe Wright. I mean, these are, defensive players that have really made an impact. Now, I don't know if this is a first year kind of wait and see, and all of a sudden it's going to take a big upswing. Maybe this is a, show me what you can do with what you have, and then I'll really start to consider Tennessee. He was the lead recruiter for Dominic Bailey, Tennessee's lone four-star defensive line commit in this class. But, I mean, I get it. I understand why there's probably some hesitation. The defensive line wasn't particularly good last year, but you also had a lot of older players in a new system, a lot of older, highly regarded players. I mean, Kyle Phillips was a five-star. Jonathan Kongbo was a five-star. Shy Tuttle was a four or five-star, depending on the site. And they didn't look that good. So in year two, he'll now lose those three. He's going to have to replace them with some young guys, some JUCO guys. Do we see, improvement? And if so, that should bode well as far as saying to some of these recruits, hey, look at what I did in year two with these guys. Why don't you come on over to Tennessee? But yeah, I mean, recruiting's a big deal. That said, I'm not questioning the staff's ability to recruit. I mean, if you don't have a good year on the defensive line every now and then, okay. I think eventually they're going to be able to get the type of players in here. But I agree with you. It's hard to grade a staff kind of where they're at when they haven't been there very long. Mm-hmm. You look at Clemson staff, it's very easy. They've all been there forever. They've had sustained success. Yeah, that's a really, really, really good staff. It's kind of like looking at Georgia and trying to grade their staff on paper where they've been and then transpose that to where they are now. Same with Alabama. But I think you mentioned this 2 days ago. If you're doing the resume test, Tennessee's right up there with just about anybody. I mean, yes, Derek Dooley has been a head coach in the SEC and he is now the coordinator. McIntyre at Ole Miss has been a head coach and he's now, their DC. There are situations like that where you can maybe give a guy a bump because he's been a head coach. But again, like I say, well, we had Brady Hoke as defensive line coach. He was the head coach of Michigan. It didn't really work out all that well.
Yeah, I think the Sam who sent in Ole Miss and A&M, like that's a good point. Butch Jones made the best staff in America quote like a complete like joke and farce. Like it's not something you need to argue about and win. You don't win or lose best staff. You win or lose on Saturday when you play the game, So, I mean, Rich Rodriguez.
I mean, yeah, this is clearly for now, I think, an on-paper argument because we haven't seen Jim Chaney at Tennessee under Pruitt. We haven't seen Ansley at Tennessee under Pruitt or T. Martin or so on and so forth. But yeah, I think you just look at the staff and see the potential is there to be great.
Yeah.
Or to, develop great teams with what you've got.
I mean, Ole Miss has Rich Rodriguez as their offensive coordinator. Obviously, he's a good offensive mind. We know that he's obviously had some failures at different stops, success and failure along his long career. They're paying him $900,000 at Ole Miss. Here's the interesting part though. Their defensive coordinator is Mike McIntyre, the former Colorado coach. They're paying him 1.5. What are we paying Chaney?
1.5.
I mean, that's
it's a good gig if you can get it.
Yeah. Now, and I just don't know enough about the Ole Miss position coaches to break down who coaches the linebackers and whether they're better or worse than what we have at Tennessee. Right. It really just doesn't matter either. And then at A&M, their website wasn't updated. So what I told you guys during the break, the years are off by one. Mike, both these guys came in with Jimbo Fisher and his new staff. So Mike Elko was at Notre Dame before that. They've obviously had good defenses recently. So he's a pretty good DC, and then their offensive coordinator is Daryl Dickey, who we talked a little bit about because of the obvious just same name stuff with former Tennessee guy, but he was at Memphis for all the way back to 2012 and kind of moved up through the Memphis ranks with obviously a pretty good offense, and then went to A&M. So I can see why both those would be in the conversation. I think you could especially because Ole Miss, to me, is one of the lower-end teams in the SEC right now. with some really good coaches. So it creates more of a contrast, just like it is at Tennessee. Tennessee last year, obviously not very good. First year, new coach. Their staff is a lot better than their performance was last year. Same with where Ole Miss is as a program and their staff. Am I crazy to say Texas A&M might be the second best team in the West this year, but we won't really even know it because of their schedule and all that kind of stuff? I mean, I know Jimbo said playing spoiler isn't a compliment. He takes offense to that. I mean, some people think LSU might be the one to knock off Alabama. Gus Malzahn goes today. I think Auburn's definitely now back into kind of sleeper category. Like, to me, A&M is the danger team.
Well, that's the thing.
But playing Clemson and then...
We'll find out quickly how good they really are. That's for sure. But, yeah, it would...
I mean, they return a pretty good quarterback. They, you know...
Well, he's the best in the SEC, if you ask him. Maybe he's the best in the country. I can't remember.
SEC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking. Jimbo's a good coach, man. He's done it just about everywhere he's been. But that schedule does not do them any favors this year. I mean, that's a team, like... Switch the uniforms, and that team's playing Tennessee's schedule this year. What are we thinking? Like, legit 11-1,
10-2, playing Tennessee's schedule.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like 10-2. Flip the coin for the Georgia
game. Yeah, yeah. So, unfortunately for them, they get LSU and Bama and Clemson and. Don't they have one more, crazy game? Aren't they going to have four games against top five teams? Oh, Georgia. Yeah, they picked up Georgia this year.
Oh, really? That's one.
If I'm not mistaken, it's South Carolina and Georgia in the East for A&M.
Oh, no wonder.
So, yeah, it's Clemson, Georgia, Bama, LSU.
So, it's literally the toughest draw they can get with their South Carolina always inked in, plus Clemson.
Yes.
Because
you've already got Bama.
And you got LSU. The best team in the East. In Georgia, no doubt about it. You have to go on the road. They go at Georgia, at LSU, in back-to-back weeks to end the season. And they're at Clemson in week two. Holy moly. Texas State at Clemson, Lamar, Auburn, Arkansas, bye week, Alabama, at Ole Miss, Mississippi State, UTSA, bye week, then South Carolina at Georgia, at LSU.
Enjoy your season.
Hour three rolls on here. Stick with us on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. I had it wrong earlier. Gus Malzahn's last today, which is smart.
Yeah.
That'll make people
sleep. The Riders have to sleep in and then skip Vandy in Kentucky and then show up for lunch and Gus Malzahn.
I don't know. I'd want to be there for Derek Mason. He usually says something interesting. He's fun.
Yeah, I can't wait for him to take a shot at Tennessee.
Stoops and Odom are the most – they're the – boringest to me.
It's really Odom by a long shot.
I mean, they're about the same person.
Really. But I'm with you.
Big barrel-chested defensive guys.
Yeah. Good point.
And Chad Morris, I don't even think I know what he looks like.
I couldn't pick him out of the lineup.
Yesterday, he basically said, I know what it's like to be a loser. We had a bad year at Clemson, had a really bad year my first year at SMU, and same at Arkansas. We'll get it turned around.
Yeah, that was really instilling confidence.
That was his theme.
Yeah, great job.
I know what it's like to have an awful first year, and don't you worry. They never really turned it around at SMU, though, right? They never really had anything. I mean, they were better, but I don't know how much credit. I mean, I guess he gets some credit for Clemson, but like you mentioned, there's a lot of other guys there that are still there that, you know. Clemson keeps two coordinators around that don't even leave. On offense. That's crazy.
And didn't we try to get one of them a little bit?
We tried to get the third guy, quarterback's coach.
That's right.
We were going way down the list.
Great.
I mean, that's got to be the best staff in America, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're
at least hot.
They return all of them, and they've got the best – one of the best teams I've ever seen last year.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys coming back. So yeah.
And they won a natty with guys outside that kind of recruiting range. Then they upped the ante and started recruiting guys, or the recruiting services just hedge a little bit more, and they recruited better players, I'm sure. It's both. And now they're just absolutely stacked loaded. Didn't help the Tennessee sucked, and we let them have three players that we probably get if we're good.
Like Trevor Lawrence and T. Higgins, 1 and 2. Not to mention Feaster, who was running all over the place last year.
Feaster transferred. Do you know that?
I was thinking of Etienne. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think we were in on him, too.
I'm trying to think
where
Feaster went. Might have been the SEC. But anyway. I mean, they're so good, you're naming running backs that, like, didn't work out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Every year they have, like, one group that's just so flipping good. Remember that one year they had, like, the McKenzie dude at corner and, like, two other guys who were sensational? Yeah. You're mentioning the safety. Last year their defensive line receiving core was stupid, not to mention you had Trevor Lawrence. But, my goodness, it's, like, unfair. They just they keep hitting on a different part of the of like each side of the field, right? Mm-hmm. Like they have a really great unit on defense and a really great unit on offense, but you can't get used to it because then the next year it's a different one. It's really frustrating. The Open Championship is going on this morning.
Oh, yeah.
And early favorite heading into this tournament, Rory McIlroy, posted a big old snowman on the first hole. Mm. Shot
of a nice eight
on a par. Was that a par three?
Four.
First hole? Oh, okay.
It was a quad.
So he was four over after one. Mm-hmm. And
I love when I get my money's worth on a hole. You know, really see all the different
it's really like
sand
playing
options.
Two, it's like playing two holes.
You know, I want to see both sides of the water. You know, the side I hit into and then hit it over and then have to drop back.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's a really good point. I mean, you know, I don't go to the driving range to hit four shots. I want to hit, you know, 50.
Right.
So it's basically what Rory did on hole number one. Your leader right now, Shane Lowry, local guy, big Ireland guy.
Yeah, not Tennessee, but there, local there.
Yeah, local guy for the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. He's four under. He has finished his round. He is your leader. Couple guys at three, couple guys at two, and then let me keep scrolling. I don't know what Rory's even at now. It's not good.
Plus three through 14.
Okay. Okay. He's not David Duvall. If that makes you feel better, Rory. David Duvall threw 15 holes, plus 15. Bogey golf. Which, if I'm playing, I'm like, eh, not a terrible day, not a horrible day. Bogey golf, I'll take that. David Duvall right now on pace for, what is that, like an 89? 86?
Have you seen the latest trend of people trying to compare themselves to professional athletes? You know, and there was the, like, 12% of
men. Oh, like when Dan Mullen said he hit a 7-iron 173 yards for a hole-in-one?
Yeah, and then where the men comparing themselves to Serena Williams and whether they could win a point off her, and then
it wasn't win a point, was it? I thought it was just – was it win a point off Serena, or was it return a serve?
It said win a point.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of people
I don't even think I could return a serve against anybody who plays high school tennis or higher.
Well, like what I pointed out is like, okay, you're not going to return or serve, as you mentioned. Would you like to serve?
I don't even know if I could get a racket on it.
Like, unless you play a lot of tennis, like any serve you hit, she's just going to crank back at you and hit a winner or put it so far and hard that if you do get a racket back on that ball, she's going to be now at the net and
you're toast.
Overhead you to death right there and murder you.
Tyler just sent me a DM, said David Duvall plus 15 after 15. He actually birdied the first two holes.
Good grief.
So there's hope, Rory.
My point with all that, though, is that the golf is the ultimate, right? Because a lot of guys play a lot of golf, and they start comparing themselves to, like, the LPGA, and then you're like, this would be good for me, but
not on this course.
That's what
I mean. That would be elite for me on this course.
Right. That's what people don't understand. Like these courses that they play. Somebody said, I want the PGA once a year to schedule a tournament at just a regular average municipal course with the setup just like it is any day of the week. And just to show you normal guys what these guys
would
shoot.
Oh, how they like go 20 under
right,
or something?
Right, on that course. You know.
Like playing from the municipal tips,
sure.
How just they would smoke you. Like, even making them play the tips.
Give them a practice round. They'll probably be cutting corners and hitting over trees that you've never even thought of.
I'm not saying this to down, like, collegiate golfers, but have you ever watched, like, the SEC championship golf stuff? Like, because they're playing nice courses, but they're not playing, you know, Augusta. They're not playing Bethpage Black. They're playing good courses that are not set up for the PGA.
Yeah.
And those guys are, I mean, they're sticking them. They're making 80-foot putts, and it's like, wow, these guys are really good. It's like, yeah, they are really good, if you put Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, any of these guys on this board on a course like that, they're going probably double digits aside under par. Like, it's going to be unbelievable.
Well, even the guys that play on the web.com tour, like, you can go to Fox Den and watch that open, the Knoxville Open, and, like, closer than me and you are setting right now, you can watch those guys.
Mm-hmm. It's still unbelievable.
It'll make you not want to play golf anymore.
Right. Yeah. But then if you took the PGA and dropped them on Fox, then it's going to be
even better.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be it's going to be stupid. The distance, the power, the ability to read greens, it's unlike anything people can comprehend. It's like Tyler Lane saying, "Yeah, you see Augusta on TV and you realize this is a tough course and the greens are difficult cuz they're fast and they're slopey, and then you get there and see how slopey they are and it's just like, whoa."
Have y'all ever been?
No, I want to go.
Oh, TV. It looks like a total different course in person.
That's what everybody tells
me. Yeah, it doesn't even do it justice at all. Like, walking up a hill on TV just looks like a little slight incline. Like, when you're there, you're, like, breaking your neck to look up the hill.
Hmm. I got to get down.
But I do have a question, if we can stay on this for a minute. So, the poll was out. Is it easier to or can you score a point on Serena? Do you think it would be easier to score a point on Serena or beat a LPGA Tour pro on a par three?
The par three.
It's not even close.
You think so?
Yeah, you can get.
Getting lucky and hit one shot. Now, could I beat her for 18 holes? No.
You would you got to take ties out of the equation. Like, you have to win the hole. Yeah, because even if you hit a good shot,
but I have to win a ton of shots against Serena to get a point. If I can, do I get how many? Like, what are we talking about? Like, you get five chances.
Sure.
So,
or we'll say 10. You get 10 chances.
So 10 holes. I have to beat her in one, and I get five serves to Serena and five serves back.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna think I could win 1 out of 10 playing golf. I stink at tennis. He may have a shot to win a point against Serena. I do not. Tennis, volleyball, ping pong, I'm out. Balls and nets, no. Now, I am good at badminton, like really good. Stinking good at that game. But when it comes to ping pong and tennis, absolutely not.
I mean, obviously it would depend on your level at each one of those sports for people to answer that question. But
don't you think the average person could get lucky with a golf shot more than they could get lucky returning a shot against Serena?
Maybe, although making it to 10 almost, it makes it a lot more likely that you'll win 1 point. I played junior tennis. I played college tennis at a lower level college. I was All-State in high school. I went to a camp that was only for the top 10 ranked players in the state at each age group. So we had the little kindergarten kids all the way up through, I was in the oldest group. And we had a ton of kids there. And they had a pro that was there who was like in the 300s in the world. And he played every kid 1 point. And the kids got to serve. And so with the little kid, he would hit a ball back so the little kids could actually stay in the point, and then he'd try to end them after that. But when we got to the older group, like, I got incredibly lucky. I had a great serve. He had already played 80 points in a row or whatever it was, and he tried to just crush one back cross court, and it clipped the net and didn't get over. So I beat the pro for 1 point. But it was, then you watch him play the best teaching pro at that particular resort down in Hilton Head, and it's like, oh my, you talk about Augusta National in person, people talk about hockey all the time in person, right?
That's a great example.
Like, you watch tennis on TV, I don't know, take the highest level of anything you've ever played. You ever watched yourself run as a high school football player or middle school? You think you're pretty fast until you watch it on video.
You think you're fast and you're jumping high, and then you're like, "Oh, I was so high! Here comes the
God!" I watched myself as an old fat guy playing this 3-on-3 basketball, and I wanted to vomit.
I thought I looked pretty good.
You used to have that nice urban jumper, but you know what I mean.
Well, that was also 65 pounds ago.
You watching Nadal Federer at Wimbledon, and then on TV. And then go watch the 300th best guy in the world play another 300th best guy in the world, or hell, go over to UT and watch them play Florida in tennis. It's free. Just walk in, walk right down to the like first row and watch those guys hit the ball, and you'll be like, holy, I'm not even touching this. So, yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. But it is funny. I saw one tweet where a guy said, got to the golf course, playing with a guy I didn't know. He bragged that he likes watching LPGA golf more than PGA golf because he could play on that tour. Proceeded to lose to my buddy who's a 19 handicap. Yeah. Like, people are crazy. That's the big takeaway here. We'll come back. Hour three rolls on. Stick with us. It's Fox Sports Knoxville. Three and out rolls on here. Hour number three, Thursday edition, final day of SEC Media Days. Apparently, a Bama linebacker said that they're still better than Clemson if both teams play their best. I mean, as much as I hate kind of the no parity with those top two teams, I guess I've kind of just given up. If they play again, it'll be interesting to see if one can, you know, like if Saban wins this year, it's like, okay, they're Dabo and Saban just equally great. If Dabo wins again, though, you start torches pass, like, over.
Oh, really? Just like that?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying in the moment, like, it's just.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll buy that.
Yeah, Saban's peaked and he's on his way down. He can still beat everybody else, but Dabo's kind of past him, I think. Of course, Trevor Lawrence. Well, if Trevor Lawrence and Tua are both 100% healthy, like, I mean, you talk about star power. That's crazy.
Well, that's what, I mean, I'm not sticking up for Alabama, but I do wish that game could have been played with Tua 100% healthy. I mean, he didn't play most of last season with 100% health.
That's kind of the knock on him, too.
Yeah, that's true. It's a fair point.
That's part of recruiting a guy that,
you know,
runs
Big
around.
Ten Media Days is going on this weekend in Chicago.
Yeah, ACC, too. What's going on in Big Ten days?
Oh, it's in Chicago. I'm going to Chicago. You want me to go talk to Harbaugh for you or anything?
Ah, too bad Urban Meyer's not there. I'd love to get a question in there.
I want to make sure.
How does it feel to have your career ruined by a guy that writes for Facebook.com?
Well, formerly of Facebook.com, now of Stadium.com. Tough.
Big Ten. Harbaugh, is that the – who else you want to talk to in the Big Ten? Anybody else?
I don't even know how many Big Ten coaches I could name, honestly.
Fitzgerald at Northwestern, no.
Antonio.
Ference at Iowa. I can name a bunch, but none of them are interesting.
None of them are interesting. Is Fitzgerald still at Northwestern?
Frost. Let's talk to Frost.
Oh, yeah, Frost. Oh, yeah, go see Scott Frost. That's not bad. That's not bad. I'll go check it out.
Ask him if he thinks the Nebraska rebuild is easier or harder than the Tennessee one.
Are you excited about reigniting the Tennessee-Nebraska rivalry, Scott?
James Franklin.
In the playoffs.
You think I could get credentialed this close to the day? I probably could.
Big Ten?
Yeah, they probably don't
have
many.
Dude, you can walk up to the table and just
maybe
tell
I'll try.
Say, hey, I'm with Fox Sports Knoxville. I want to ask some questions. Okay.
Maybe I'll give it a shot.
Credentials are really funny.
They are.
Like, because I did that NFL training camp tour, and it was like the NFL teams are all in the same league, and their media policies are just like insanely different. And it was really weird. We get in super easily for some teams.
Team choice.
Others are crazy.
Failed to mention former Tennessee head coach Jeff Brohm will be at Big Ten Media Days.
Yes, that is true. I can go ask.
Did you see the Face app tweet somebody put out?
Of
Jimmy Himes.
Oh, no.
And the caption was, the Jeff Brohm years have been the best years.
Well, yeah, I want to ask him about his tenure at Tennessee and what he thought of it. You know, I'd like to get his take. Gosh, that'd be funny if I could sneak in, ask that question, and just like bolt. Go.
Coach, what did you learn from your time at Tennessee as their head football coach that one day in?
Well, it was formally reported on ESPN's Outside the Lines with Tom Lee, who has retired, by the way.
Tom Lee. Is that the right name?
Isn't it?
Bob Lee.
Bob, Tom. I knew it was short. Okay. Mo, Kip, Sam. Short name. But yeah, so that's going on. Doesn't really matter. You ever been to Chicago? Billy, you ever been to Chicago?
I have, but I didn't do the Chicago. I was just there for the Bears, and they're outside the city.
The Cubs playing?
Stayed in the South Side.
Yeah, we're going Saturday, Wrigley. So bucket list, check that off. There's a heat wave in Chicago this weekend. Temps near
81?
No, like 100.
Oh, for real? I thought you were making a joke about northern people saying it's a heat wave.
No.
80s.
Like, I got an alert on my phone that was like,
it's okay. Hey, it'll be breezy. It's Chicago.
Warning, heat.
Windy City.
Heat wave in Chicago this weekend. Be careful. So I'm real excited about that.
Yeah, at least you're used to it. You're a southern guy.
Maybe the humidity won't be as bad. I mean, it should be windy, so at least there's a breeze.
I just said that.
That's what they tell me. No, I know. I was just saying. I'm used to the humidity, but maybe that. It's like, you know, dry heat. Yeah, yeah. I can handle dry heat.
Coming off the lakes, you'll be fine.
Well, it'll blow from the west, likely, so it'd be not quite to the lake yet. Maybe the lake will cool it down. But, yeah, I've never been, so we'll see.
It swirls. That's why it's the Windy
City. I hope
City.
I get to go up in the Willis Tower. It's not the Sears Tower anymore. Mm. Don't confuse it. The Willis Tower.
Okay.
Where Ferris Bueller went.
Yeah.
I'd like to do all the things Ferris Bueller did, including steal a Ferrari and drive it around. I think that'd be pretty fun. But, yeah, Cubs game.
You should hit the Bears. Wonder if their training camp's open yet. Go
watch Mitchell Trubisky.
There any Vols? Hum the tater. In Chicago?
Hum the tater around. I don't think so. Azani, is Azani still there? I'm going to go have lunch with Zach Azani.
One of my friends is a good buddy with him. I can put a text in.
That'd be great. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Don't. I don't really want to do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. The Bears were great. We got to just like eat in the cafeteria right with the players.
That's weird. That's kind of their zone. I don't think I'd want to be in there.
Nobody messed with them.
That's their space. I wouldn't want to encroach.
They didn't care.
Well, they might have not told you they cared, but they might have actually cared.
You have to get some pizza.
Pizza Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
Pizza pasta Friday night. Then we're doing some steakhouse on Saturday night. The Chicago Chop House, but it's not like our Chop House. It's like a different Chop House. Not the same company. Apparently, the Chicago Chop House is like the place. So we're going to, I don't know. We'll see.
Cut the check.
Chicago, one of those. It's a good food city, I'm told. Hmm. I mean, I've had deep dish pizza. I've had good steak. So we'll see where it stacks up.
Yeah.
I haven't been to a Cubs game, though. Excited about that. That could be a pretty good trip. But, yeah, might have to miss a little bit of the show tomorrow, by the way. That's why I really brought this up. I may have to leave early to catch my flight. Thank God I'm flying. You might have to drive like 8.5 hours to get to Chicago.
That's not a bad drive.
I mean, it's not a bad flight either.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, got a pretty good deal on the flight, so I'm not too worried about it. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Well, has there been any more?
It's a good weekend to go. I mean, it's just the Open. There's no real other sports stuff going on.
Big Ten Media Days, hello.
You're going to be there for that.
Kind
on
of
location.
A big deal. Something might happen.
I really do want you to ask that Jeff Brohm question now. Like that,
I'll see when he goes and take. Yeah. He's probably on today or tomorrow. Mm. But we'll see.
Do they do more than 2 days?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Probably I don't think they would do it on a Saturday, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think the SEC should do Media Days on just one massive day, all on a Saturday.
That'd be awful.
What was last Saturday? It was Wimbledon and tour. Last Saturday would have been the day to do it. Like, you know, 2 days
before. There wasn't much going on.
And just own it. That's the new SEC Media Day Saturday. It will be the biggest sporting thing for, you know, this country.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not.
Okay.
Probably not going to do that.
Maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Take over the weekend. Just truncate one day.
You think I'll see Vince Vaughn? He's a big Chicago guy, right?
Yeah. I don't.
Like in the breakup, he was doing the boat tours and the bus tours.
Maybe. How are you around celebrities? Do you freak out? Do you want to get an autograph picture?
No, I
didn't think so.
I would not. I mean, maybe a picture if it was like a group of people, but I wouldn't be like, oh my God, can I please get my... No, I'm not a fanboy like that. Although Vince Vaughn, that'd be a pretty cool guy to meet. A friend of mine met him. She said he was really, really nice. Hmm. He came to Tennessee for like a comedy tour and he was on campus walking around. Just ran into him right outside of the T-Rex.
There you go. Well, safe travels.
Thank you.
But you'll be here to start the show tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely to start. Definitely for at least 2 hours.
So we got that going for us.
We'll come back. Good on you.
One more segment on today's broadcast.
Auburn's in trouble, by the way.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I thought you may have. I wanted to make sure that all of our listeners are well aware. Auburn is in trouble with the NCAA in basketball.
An important final segment next. Auburn's in trouble?
Yeah, apparently it goes back to the, who was that coach they had that got fired?
In basketball?
Yeah, the assistant.
Oh, yeah, he avoided jail time, prison time. Chuck something?
Chuck Pearson, I believe.
That's it.
Yeah.
Huh.
They're expecting a notice of allegations from the NCAA this week.
I thought they already had one for him. Like, I thought, there's so much cheating in college basketball, I can't even keep it straight.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't want you to keep it straight.
So, like, what about what does this mean for Bruce Pearl? Like, are we, is this the end?
I don't know. Like, Auburn's playing it off as like, oh, no, it's about Pearson. Don't worry about it. But I didn't think you got to do that anymore. I thought from now on the head coach was, in fact, culpable in situations like
that. But apparently the head coach can be on the phone with a guy talking about making him a strong-ass offer and isn't culpable. So I don't know how you reconcile those two things. Like, if you're not guilty on the phone yourself, I don't know how you could find another guy guilty of his assistant coach doing it. Very, very strange.
Well, the NCAA loves to hammer assistant coaches and let the head coach skate.
That's true.
Matt Hayes of Bleach Report just posted.
I can't read this.
Why?
I keep getting a 404 error every time I click on it.
Oh, I got it. You want me to read the title?
Yeah, let's hear
it. Once a proud SEC heavyweight, Tennessee will never be elite again. Hashtag Vols. Thanks for the hashtag, Matt. It's really good stuff. He starts the article saying Jeremy Pruitt led the podium conversation extolling the academic virtues of his team. And that's one of the reasons why Tennessee will never be good. Jeremy Pruitt says, hey, we have 53 guys in the spring who had a 3.0 or better.
Just to own it a little bit, I have made fun of, you know, other lower tier programs for doing that similar.
Fair. And then obviously he says, well, back in reality, 7 losing seasons in the past 11, 5 in the past 8, they've won 2 or fewer SEC games, haven't had a player selected in 3 of the last 5 NFL drafts, 4 full-time and 2 interim coaches in the last 10 years have a combined 62-63 record. He then says, if we're talking about academics, look at Vanderbilt. The big bad Commodores with tougher academic restrictions have won 3 straight. Blah, 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 blah. The Tennessee job has become a stepping stone or a tombstone, he says. Says the lunacy hit an all-time high at the end of the 2017 season and led to a convergence of events that concluded with the Vols overpaying a career assistant coach, Pruitt, $4 million a year to mop up the mess. Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse than Lane Kiffin leaving after one season, Derek Dooley comparing his team to German troops at Normandy, or Butch Jones and his turnover trash can, along comes 2 weeks of a coaching search infamous for the once proud program. Said they had Dan Mullen off the hook, waited too long. They had Dave Dorn, Jeff Brohm on the hook, waited too long. Had Washington State standing on the altar, then fired John Curry and replaced him with Phil Fulmer.
The only coach that you mentioned that I would even think about trading right now is for Mike Leach.
I agree. I think he's just saying, like, you had coaches who had been coaches and you went with Pruitt. Former Florida coach Steve Spurrier said the game has changed and Tennessee doesn't quite have the advantages it did with facilities and recruiting, like we said. It's a lot like Nebraska. Can they get it back? Shoot, there's a lot more to it now. The Vols are 29th, they're 24th now, in the composite rankings for 2020, behind 10 other SEC teams. That's not getting you to Atlanta in the championship game for the first time since 2007. That's placing you at the end of a growing list of coaches who couldn't figure it out, talking about Jeremy Pruitt. That's not recapturing the golden age. That's reinforcing a reality as clear as General Nealon's maxims. Tennessee will never, ever be elite again. I'm sorry, like, if Clemson can do it, Tennessee can do it. If we're wanting to talk about what a university has at its disposal, geography, Tennessee is closer to being able to do it than a lot of schools who can, and some that are doing it right now. Like, Tennessee has an easier path with good hires and good leadership to a national championship than Notre Dame, than Nebraska, than Washington, than, hell, maybe even Oregon. It's just, it's all about leadership, hires, coaching, development.
Yeah, Colorado, so, whatever.
Yeah, I guess he's taking the field here, but this seems like a pretty lazy article.
Well,
it's like Jeremy Pruitt's happy that his team didn't flunk out of school, and that means that they don't care about football. Well, have you talked to Jeremy Pruitt? The guy's a football guy. That's all he cares about.
There's the problem with these types of articles is the probability is that he'll be right for long stretches of time.
Correct.
But that's the probability for every program.
Correct.
I mean, tell me how many programs have been dominant recently. Two? Three?
If we're talking dominant, yeah. I mean, Clemson and Alabama.
Who would be next? Ohio State, maybe? Like, how far can
Oklahoma,
you even...
Oklahoma, Ohio State.
How many can you even make the argument for?
But the thing about all those schools is they all kind of have their ebbs and flows in history. I mean, Oklahoma disappeared for 20 years, and then here comes Bob Stoops, and they win a title.
Yep.
Miami disappears, and then all of a sudden they're really, really good again under Larry Coker, and then they've kind of disappeared since then.
Yeah, Clemson was pretty average for 30 years between their natties, and Alabama even had their moments too.
I don't know. I get it, like, especially after 2017 and then last year not going great. It's easy to take the shots at Tennessee. Like, we're an easy target. And we're, you know, frankly, a fan base that's going to click on this article and read it and discuss it. If he had more data, then they're not doing good right now. Okay. But his point is they're never going to be elite again because they're not good right now. That doesn't make sense. Like, elite teams ebb and flow. They rise and fall.
You could... The titles
families
just...
are always rising and falling
the title,
in America.
The titles
right?
just get Tennessee is just to get people to click it. Really, the title should have been Reality Check. Tennessee, not where it's used to being. That would have been a better title for what you actually wrote.
Yeah, but the clickbait article, like you said.
Get out of here with that Bleacher Report. You get a thumbs down from me today. The Blitz Matt is Hayes. Next. Matt Hayes, get better at your job.
But you're welcome for the pub.
We'll be back tomorrow, Friday edition, 7 o'clock. Tune in then.